Hey, just a quick note. Andy Slammons asked me to mention about his upcoming private label retreat. This one's actually going to be held in Orlando in October, October 6th through the 9th. If you're interested in private label and you want to get one-on-one with him, Leron, and Nathan, this is the environment. This is where you're going to be up late at night working on growing your business. Q4 is here. You've already got that set. Let's get 2018 up to snuff. Get going with the new product that you bring to market. And you're going to learn about it at his retreat in Orlando, October 6th through the 9th. If you're interested in any way, they've already sold, I think, half of them. So there's a little bit of time left to get in. Just private message me and I'll give you a link that they have so you could see it and make a decision. And there's some testimonials and that kind of thing. So again, just private label me and I'll get the info to you. I was talking to Karen Locker the other day from Solutions for E-Commerce. We all know she's a sponsor of my show. She pays me. I don't want to hide that, right? The other thing she reminded me, though, is that if you sign up for her service through my link, you get $50 off, right? You knew that. I forgot that she offers an inventory health assessment. I'm like, Karen, I probably should be talking about that. That valuable service, she's going to take a look through your inventory and help you figure it out. They're going to take care of your suppressed listings. You're tired of having stranded inventory? Is inventory getting lost? When's the last time you looked at your shipments to get them reconciled? How about refunds? Has that happened? Well, Karen takes care of all that for me. She's been doing it for almost 2 years. I pay the same rate you do, but I'm very, very pleased with the service. And two guys, two well-known guys in the area, reach out to me saying, hey, you've been with her. Are you satisfied? I'm perfectly satisfied. And again, I can message her. I get the services I need. So it's Solutions for E-Commerce. The only way you're going to get that deal is using my code MOMENTUM. I have a link on my website. You have to go there. If you're thinking about outsourcing that piece of your business, get your inventory looked at.
Welcome to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast, where we focus on the people, the products, and the process of e-commerce selling today. Here's your host, Stephen Peterson.
Welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. This is episode 224, Stephen Pope. I love talking about this guy because he gets the perspective, both sides of the equation, meaning that he works in the marketing for a massive company, large operation in the e-commerce marketing. And so he gets to see that side of it, gets resources, gets tools, has an extensive background, which we get into. And then he also has his own private label business. That's the best position to be in. So you get to learn the best and then come and apply it. And he just shares it with us. And I just think it's so cool. And I love talking to guys like this. Let's get into the podcast. All right, welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. Excited about today's guest. I've been chasing him for a while, but the dude is busy, and you're going to hear why. Stephen Pope. Welcome, Stephen.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you for coming on. You are a little busy, my man. You are. Well, you know, it's funny. Since you and I talked, because I remember we met in Atlanta at Seller Labs Resonate Conference, which was an awesome conference, by the way. Do you agree?
I do. I actually went to their latest meet and greet over in Athens. Jeff Cohen wasn't sure if people would come out to Athens, but turns out they will. So they did it in Atlanta and then in Athens. So I've been to two this year for them.
So which, well, that's a good question about Athens versus the Atlanta one. I love the Atlanta one. The hotel was right next door. The environment, the place where they had it, I thought was phenomenal. And then the restaurant they took us to was phenomenal. And the content was so strong, and the way it was displayed, because they had all those TVs, it was just, they made it very easy. What was your experience in Athens?
So I would say Seller Labs is the beginning of a cult brand, where they've got a movement behind them, and I really appreciated getting to know Brandon. I know you just had Brandon on one of your previous podcasts.
He's unbelievable, isn't he? I mean, you never knew he existed, and now all of a sudden he's everywhere. He really is great.
Jeff is definitely the face of Seller Labs in terms of what people know and see at all the you know shows that everybody goes to. But Brandon had more of a soft-spoken way he built his company and really focused in on a lot of different aspects. So I appreciate personally just being able to rub shoulders with other people and figure out what their problems are. I'm local. I'm in Atlanta. So I've been trying to rub shoulders a lot more with people who are doing private label and reverse wholesale and 100 other things that everybody does on marketplaces. And so what I like is that they're not only local, but they bring in the right people. And we are seeing a shift in terms of who's showing up to these conferences, definitely a lot more private label people than the corporate folk. Corporate folk are definitely going to more of the IRCs, but I do think it's down to earth. One of the speakers that they had, really incredible. If your listeners haven't watched this one yet, they definitely need to go and watch it. It was the My Audio Pets. You can find a clip of it on the Seller Labs Facebook page. Definitely my favorite opportunity to meet somebody or listen to somebody at that conference. And basically, he came up with an idea, tracked down a manufacturer out of China, and flipped, you know, $400,000 in investment, somehow getting that money from his friends and family, and then turned it into several million within 3 months, got it on Oprah. Just an incredible story, much better than mine, to be honest.
But, well, no, I'll get that one. So the environment of the Athens location, was it what you expected?
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely a smaller.
Yeah, but the smaller, the intimate, I like. I mean, I think intimate is better, right?
Yeah, I mean, there were 40 sellers plus the entire staff of Seller Labs, yeah. And the reason they did it that way is because they didn't have an opportunity to get their entire staff to meet the people that use their product. So they basically brought them in house. They own a building out in Athens, so.
Well, that's great. I think the way you described it, it's kind of a cult brand. I agree with you. I think when I look at where they're going and what they're working on and their ability to communicate, I think they're really strong. And yes, they are a sponsor of my show, but I'm not saying that without believing it. So I guess I should say it that way, because I really do believe it. And I agree with you. I mean, to me, the cool thing about Jeff is he's so approachable because he is everywhere. And I remember him telling me, he's like, Steve, I have to be everywhere because if not, my competitors will be. And I'm like, you know what? That's very rational, but he's approachable. And then to get to hang out with Brandon and to get that close and, you know, I don't know if you listened to the interview I did with him, but I mean, to hear how he just spent a weekend, you know, creating a product, you know, I'm like, are you kidding me? A weekend, you know, when you're that skilled. And then the other thing that blew me away about him was his depth of knowledge. And I just didn't think, you know, a CEO would be that knowledgeable of the product. And he is. You agree?
I would say not only is he knowledgeable, but you could tell he cared. And he was taking something that he tried. He basically built his product to fix a problem he was experiencing on his own sales. And that's the perfect product, right? Perfect product because it solves a problem. He had to let go of a couple of pet projects along the way. And that's hard. That's hard for people to do, where you put your blood, sweat, and tears into something. And then you realize that other thing that you didn't care as much about, how crude the stuff you might have cared more about. And then it's your new baby and you focus there. But
Well, I'm glad you had the same experience because I agree with you there. I think also, and I'm going to make this statement because I will be there again, is it was probably one of the best conferences I went to. And I went to a lot of them. And this is not putting any other one down. I don't mean it that way. Just meaning that the depth of knowledge, the communication, and again, the environment made it one of the better conferences I've been to in a long time. All the little details. I particularly love the details and the fact that they paid attention to them. So the fact that you got to see the whole staff, I think, would really take it to the next level. I hope they'll do them in Athens now, ongoing.
I think they're probably going to do maybe one every 6 months, one in Atlanta and Athens. I actually don't know, but that's what I would do if I was them.
Okay, well, we met there, and I remember us talking, and we were talking about your business.
So just kind of a little bit of background. I'm a digital marketer by trade. I understand tech, but I'm not a tech guy. Mm-hmm. And right now, I'm the director of marketplaces for Lights Online on the corporate side. And at the same time, I've recently launched my own business called Fine Occasion. And we do 90% of our business on Amazon on both of those fronts. So I basically do both corporate digital marketing and marketplaces, as well as guerrilla marketing and marketplaces, if you will. So I understand both worlds and I live them every day.
So it's a lighting company?
Yes. So the lighting company is Lights Online, and they're owned by Progressive Lighting. And what's nice about selling lighting is higher average order value, big ticket items. Mm-hmm. And it's an industry that is way behind most other industries. So there's definitely some first to market opportunities. I launched Seller Fulfilled Prime, have probably one of the most successful Seller Fulfilled Prime programs. I honestly don't know anybody who's had more success than we've had on that front. And then meanwhile, I met a partner in Oklahoma and we launched Fine Occasion. So he's kind of the operations mastermind and I'm the growth mastermind. And so I can speak to both fronts to your listeners. And you're going to have listeners probably on both sides of that aisle where some are like, hey, how can I incorporate this into my $25 million company? And others are going to be like, how do I incorporate it into my $250,000 company, if you know what I mean?
Hmm. Well, I'm interested to hear how you end up there. I'm looking at the website of Lights Online. Stunning. I mean, just stunning. Wow. When I look at, from a professional point of view, clearly have done it correct. But 90%, are you saying 90% of your sales come through Amazon?
That's correct.
Even though you have this incredible website. I mean, I'm looking at it. I'm just telling you. I mean, I see a lot of stuff. I see a lot of Shopify stores and stuff like that. I mean, this is really rich. I mean, you got your house links. You've got a pretty complete approach to it. And yet, Amazon.
Yeah, I think it has a lot to do with the newness of it, if you will.
Okay.
And I think maybe just taking a step back and telling your listeners a little bit about my background. Mm-hmm. I've worked for a lot of failed startups, and there's a great thing to say about that, and then there's some things that are more frustrating to say about it. On the frustrating side, I've moved all across the country during my career. Hmm. And
you have a family?
Yes. So
that makes it easy then, right? Yeah.
Yeah, right. On the positive side, I've had my hands in so many different businesses. I could speak to like seven different verticals with pristine knowledge. I actually started out my career as a television reporter. And I was doing that up in Idaho and Wisconsin. And one of the things that I can't stress enough in marketplace learning and in digital marketing in general is ask questions, right? Because if you don't ask the right question, then you don't figure out how to move forward or you don't get the right information. And so along the way, I've dipped my hands in all these things and several questions keep coming up time and time again. And then in other industries, there's kind of those one-offs. And so you kind of have to figure out where do you want to take a business and how do you get there? And a lot of businesses get tied up in the day-to-day frustrating daily activities, the must-dos, if you will, in the day. And it's hard to take a step back and figure out, okay, well, here's where I am today, but here's where I want to be in 1 and 2 years and then work backwards. And so that's kind of, I'd say that's kind of where a lot of your, the people that you've brought onto your podcast have had a lot of success under their belt and they're potentially at the peak of their momentum.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that I'm right at the curve of the hockey stick where I'm just starting to go up the hockey stick. And I feel like if you had a conversation with me in a year from now, my life and my business and everything that I'm doing would be completely different and hopefully a lot farther ahead than it is today because I feel like I'm just on the verge of figuring out a lot of things.
Wait, when you were a reporter, did you go to journalism school or communications?
I did.
Okay, so that's what you went to.
University in Ogden, Utah, kind of a commuter school, and I was on the debate team and did a communications degree there. And a lot of your listeners aren't going to know this, but television reporters, they don't make a lot of money.
No, and for sure.
For every one job, there's like 100 people that want it. And so television as an industry is completely collapsing. And that's not even to say anything about the last year of the fake news mantra, not even speaking to any of that. Like the local television markets are collapsing. And so...
And why is that?
It has a lot to do with the push of media online. That's the obvious answer.
Mm-hmm.
But the less obvious answer is the right information is not being displayed on those mediums.
Because, go ahead, I'm going to lead you there. I was a newspaper, yeah. So I get it. So go ahead.
Yeah. So So when I was a television reporter, I felt like I made the news a lot of the times. And what
meaning
I mean
you,
by that is,
you mean you found it and brought it to attention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so sometimes you have to force it a little bit. And so being a television reporter was awesome in many regards. You know, one day I'm out flying in a hot air balloon. And the next day I'm interviewing Don Wells or Fonzie or the mayor of the city, or I'm visiting Yellowstone to go see, you know, the president visit, or I'm sitting in the courthouse listening to some kind of angering back and forth between lawyers. I mean, it was intense. But at the same time, you know, television reporters, they, you know, in their first markets, it's kind of like a guild. You work your way up. I made $19,000 my first job. I actually took a pay cut when I graduated. I was working in a call center for like, you know, 13, 14 bucks an hour, and went down to take my career step as a television reporter. And so what's interesting about television is when you're talking to people, you're usually talking to them on the best day of their lives or the worst day of their lives, most typically. And so you get a very big, wide berth of emotions. And I feel like the media, though, is just they're spending so much time making stories instead of telling stories. And that's one of the things I appreciate about your podcast. You know, while you are leading me through the answer, you're helping me tell the story. You're not making it. And so that would be my criticism of media.
And it's also because they're not the audience doesn't follow them, correct? And so therefore they can't bring traffic to their advertisers. So therefore their business model is collapsing, and the ownership of those has been consolidated enormously. And so now they're big, you know, they have big debt problems, and they have all these different things. So they have to make decisions based on that. I don't want to take us all the way there, but that's my experience. Is that fair for you too?
I would second that wholeheartedly. Clear Channel. My dad's actually a meteorologist as well, and Clear Channel bought his channel at one point, and basically wiped out all the talent, and then resold it at a loss 5 years later. My dad had to go to different markets, and then ended up back at that channel at some point in Salt Lake City. So yeah, I would definitely agree with that. I think the consolidation of the markets hurt more than helped in many ways.
Yeah, they come in, strip the assets, cut costs to pay for it because they went into huge debt, take a dividend out. So it's a complicated business that's consolidating, and it's affecting things. So therefore, that business was not as lucrative as you would like.
Correct.
You didn't see a giant future. Well, yeah, you were a weather guy, or additionally?
I was a television reporter. My dad was the meteorologist.
Okay, he was a meteorologist. Okay.
But so I got my start in e-commerce, you know, way young, back in junior high, like seventh, eighth grade. And I sold a Magic the Gathering card called a, you know, for the nerds in your audience, it was a Sliver Queen. I sold it for $25.
Nerd. Okay.
Yeah. Super nerd on eBay.
But 25 bucks is a lot of money for a seventh or eighth grader.
Yes. Yes. It probably was the most valuable card in my collection at that time, but you know, I didn't have a deck that could use it for whatever reason. Magic the Gathering is the original trading card game for those that you don't that listen that don't know, still a widely popular, highly competitive game. And anyway, so I had over the years kind of bought some of these cards and collections, and when I was a television reporter, I was really strapped for cash. And so, well, you know, I had purchased this one collection for $250, and
which is a lot of money.
Yeah. And by this point, I was so strapped for cash, I had to start selling some cards. So I turned to eBay, and I sold, you know, individually 400 different transactions. I flipped that $250 into about $5,000.
No kidding.
And it's because I had held those cards, you know, for a couple of years, and they just really started spiking. The competitive scene just got insane, and when I purchased the collection, it was worth a lot more than I paid for it, obviously. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of where I learned the e-commerce side. I didn't go to school for it. I'd say most people don't, and what they teach in school for e-commerce is questionable.
Well, it's not relevant. Let me ask you a question about the Magic the Gathering. I don't want to lose this because I still see them out there. Are they now still valuable, or have they gone
Absolutely.
The way of Zuzu pets?
No, they are only going to go up in value.
So that $5,000, what would it be today if you had those same cards? Just a giggle guess.
I would bet $10,000.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Wow, that's crazy.
Because it was some of those original revised sets, third edition, fourth edition. So some of those really valuable older cards that are used in classic tournaments, they don't reprint them, and so you can't get them anymore.
Ah, okay. All right. Well, sorry. I still see them every now and then. I'm always wondering, because I have no clue. I mean, I've never played it, never really seen it played. I have no concept of what it is other than I've seen the cards. And I probably own, several hundred of them somewhere in my warehouse. I have no clue where they're at, but I'm pretty sure I have them somewhere.
You own the cards but haven't used them.
No. Well, I'm a buyer. So I was one of those guys who would buy everything. And I ended up with enormous volumes of stuff. So I still have a warehouse full of that stuff. So where is it? It's just like the five pairs of Jordans I own somewhere. And I know they're valuable. I have not seen them in a couple of years, but they're in my warehouse somewhere. So anyway.
Yeah. So you're definitely better off selling those individually than in bulk.
Okay. And well, I might need you to help me on that one. So if I ever, when I find them, and it's not if, when I find them, that year is going to be a big year, right? Okay. So
one of the funnest games for sure.
So you, do you still play?
I've actually moved on to other trading card games. Like, so the thing I really like about Magic is how exploratory it is and the infinite number of rules, always coming out with new rules. But that's also my favorite criticism of it. Hmm. And so I like Hearthstone for its simplicity. That's by Blizzard. That's a digital trading card game. But Hearthstone is too simple. So there's kind of an in-between game, and I'm playing Gwent. And Gwent is a game that was inside.
You're definitely
a
nerd, dude.
Yeah, I know. Was definitely inside of the Witcher series, which is one of the most popular PC games by, I think it was a Polish company. Anyway, that game seems to have like the happy medium. So that's where I spend my time, and I'm currently ranked in the top 500 in the world on that. Not to say a lot, it's still in open beta, but a lot of fun. Love that.
That's crazy. I mean, it's crazy because it's cool. I mean, to me, it means nothing because I have no concept of it. But it's crazy that you could be ranked 500 in the world in anything and actually know it. I mean, to me, it's pretty cool. Pretty cool. So, okay, so you sold all them. Life was good. You made a lot of money. What'd you do with it? Live or spend it?
So life was very frustrating at that time.
Still.
As a reporter. And so, I was barely making ends meet. And I took a second reporter job after working 2 years at the station in Idaho. The week I left, that station actually went under.
Wait, like closed?
Literally closed shop. Hmm. And I was already planning on leaving. It was my two-year mark. And so I went up to Wisconsin. And I didn't last long in Wisconsin. And I was doing, at that time, a live weather hit. So I wasn't a weatherman, but on occasion they would send a reporter out just to show, what's behind.
Hey,
you,
we got snow, right? Yep. Look at here, look at the snow. The roads are covered.
Exactly.
Yeah, that guy. You're that guy.
So it was 10 o'clock at night and the middle of the biggest blizzard Wisconsin had seen in a decade. And I missed my cue to go on the air. And that's frustrating because you're staring blankly into a camera while everybody at home is like, awkward. Mm-hmm. And I missed my cue from the cameraman literally because it was snowing so hard I couldn't see him. And my hair froze over. And I got off that set and I was like, what am I doing with my life? Everybody's home in their pajamas. And I'm out here in the cold working my butt off for nothing next to, peanuts.
But everybody would think that it's so glamorous. You have a glamorous life, right? Isn't that unusual?
Because
you were a celebrity. Yeah, you go to an event and everybody knows you and you're kind of a celebrity.
And typically you're, as a television reporter in a local market, you're a local celebrity.
Right.
So people above the age of 45 or 50 might have seen you. Nobody under that ever watches local television anymore. So it was kind of like a local celebrity for the older crowd, if you will. But anyway, so I decided enough of that. I actually want to make some money in my life, and I wanted to make a big change. So I went back to school, and I picked up an MBA. And I did that through Western Governors University. They have a competency-based model. And so I could just book it through my MBA Love that school, by the way. Definitely recommend anyone and of your listeners that's looking for an MBA program that's online, that's competency-based, so you're not waiting on somebody else, you're not going to the traditional model. They should check that out at wgu.edu. But anyway, so I picked up the MBA, and then I actively was working on a way to break into a new field. And lo and behold, I found a digital marketing opportunity, and I ended up in Baltimore, Maryland, working for a company called Straighterline, which sold higher education classes for $99 a month. So I started selling subscriptions as my first true authentic marketing job.
So let's pause here a second. So digital marketing, when I think of digital marketing today, I mean, it's the Facebooks and it's the all the social world, right? What was it then when you started?
So you nailed it.
Even then.
So, you know, I'm a young guy. I'm only 30. And so this wasn't that long ago, to be honest. I've come a long way since then. But as my first marketing job, I was a marketing manager basically over all digital marketing. And I actually started beta testing advertising on Twitter. It was right when Twitter beta testing just came out. It was right when Facebook had just gone out of beta. And so I spent about $30,000 on those mediums looking for a way to build an audience, market them, and build a company.
And how long ago was this?
So this would have been 2010, 11-ish.
Okay. So, I mean, that's 6-7 years. I mean, that's a long time in e-commerce world. And in Facebook, like you're saying, Facebook's just coming out. So, you know, you're early adopter. And so $30,000 must be unheard of for a company to spend on Facebook back then, right? I mean, that's a lot of money. I mean, that's a battle, right?
And I had, you know, no prior experience, and nobody did, pretty much.
So how'd you buffalo your way into this job then?
So when I went to get my MBA, I actually took a year kind of as an in-between job as an enrollment counselor at Western Governors University.
Oh, okay.
And while I was there, I was trying to get promoted to team lead status, and I got turned down. And I got turned down because my ideas might have been a little too big for me at the time. But basically, I'd done all this research and told them how bad their conversion rates were for student leads. And I said, guys, this is how I would revolutionize your program. I would change it and do this. And then not only am I saying this, I've adopted it personally. And here's my results. I tripled the conversion rates of the people that I've been in contact with by phone, email, and otherwise. And so they declined to promote me up in the ranks there. And so I pitched their idea to their sister company, which was Straighterline. And so they loved the idea and they took me immediately. Got on a call, got a job offer the next day, and immediately started driving out like a week or two later. It was insane.
And so there is a leadership difference, right? Fair? I mean, between the two different companies. Looking at the leadership of the new company you're going to work for, Progressive, was the leadership younger, more modern? What was it why they said yes, or did your pitch get better? Because you heard what didn't work in your pitch.
It was definitely the right pitch and the right company, I would say. And so they were a startup. I was their 10th employee that they hired. So they had venture capitalist funding. I hesitate to ever want to work for venture capitalist funding again. That was a very rough time in my life.
And why is that?
Because the expectations are really high. It's very brutal. And so the company that I helped build, you know, got up to like 50, 40 employees, somewhere in that range. We launched a $2 million website. And then as soon as we launched the website, they laid off a third of the staff.
And so, is that normal practice?
I don't personally know how many times this has happened to like a venture capitalist firm, but it was, was my experience, and so I kind of had a sour taste in my mouth personally. But
is it because they expect an immediate return now? The investors who invested.
Yes, that's the sense I get.
So that's the advice from Shark Tank, right? Isn't that what you always see on Shark Tank? They're always like, look, you know, be very cautious before taking on investors because investors have a different expectation. They have no love for the product or passion for it, right? I mean, that's not their passion. They have a passion for money and making a return. That sounds very similar.
Yes, and so subscriptions, you know, were not at forecast, and so they had to make some tough decisions. And so they wanted, you know, they still got their B and C funding over time, and they still exist. But I would call it a failed startup in my mind for what it was when I was there, and so I, you know, immediately started getting on LinkedIn and started looking for digital marketing jobs, and actually quickly fell into another one working for a woman's plus size clothing. Called Ulla Popkin, German-based. And that was the job where I learned to truly become a digital marketer. So I took the job, and my CMO left that company within the first 2 months of me being there. And the P&L was turned over to a guy who had less than a solid year of digital marketing experience, primarily focused on social media and some AdWords, but not a lot. And some banners, but not a lot, and some affiliates. But I didn't truly know how to be a marketer at that stage. So I got a P&L turned over to me because, quite frankly, there was 100% marketing turnover at that company. So that's why when I say I've had experience working in these kind of failed startup environments, it's been amazing experience.
But you could only go up from there, right? I mean, it sounds like you can't fail. They all quit, so you look like a star just by showing up the next day.
But I loved it.
But what an education, though. I mean, think about that. You could sit in a classroom, and we kind of already inferred this. You could sit in a classroom all you want to, but you're never going to learn the real world force, you know, that guerrilla marketing kind of stuff, which you have to do because you have no choice, right? You have to do it. And limited resources or not, you got to do it. And you got to figure it out, right? You didn't have a whole department to go to or read this giant, go to the library and research a lot of this stuff. You have to do it and do it pretty quick, right?
The thing that I lucked out with at that company is they relied heavily upon agencies, and most of the resources were external. And so a guy who knows how to ask questions does very well in that.
So therefore, being a reporter, all that training, you know, it's funny when I, and though my regular listeners will be sitting there saying, here we go, Steve, but it's true. Your previous life has brought you to this place. You have been prepared for this moment. You just have to realize it, right? And it sounds to me that you're very self-aware, or at least you were at that time.
And so I happened to be working with some great agencies like Netflix, and they were our paid search firm, and they were a resource I just relied upon very heavily.
But you picked up from them then too, right?
Even
just through osmosis, you would pick up, hey, I asked this question, I got this answer, we got this result. Huh, there's a correlation, right? I mean, all those things kind of correlate. Interesting.
And Udayan Bose is just a great human being, and he invested very heavily in me as a person, not just as a company or as a partner. And they were not a vendor to me by any stretch. They were a partner. And so I was very fortunate in that regard. I'd also been able to learn some technology both at Ulla Popkin and Straighterline called Conductor Searchlight, which was an SEO tool, enterprise level. And a lot of competitors for that kind of SEO tool these days with keyword research. But I was able to adopt that software very early in my marketing career and get in and understand how it worked and operated. And so I went over to Ulla Popkin and just started just gunning it. And I started looking at metadata and looking at everything that could be improved and just aggressively started hacking and slashing at all the things that we had in place. Learned that my website was outdated and hadn't been upgraded in several years. So I scheduled an upgrade date. I redid all the advertising programs. And it was just like every week I'd have a solid project until I optimized or managed something until it was, you know, as good as I could get it at the time. And then I moved on to the next project.
Were they getting the results as you instituted these things and or implemented these things?
Yes. However, the challenge was that it's a very seasonal company, and we had a late winter that year. And so people, you know, our Christmas was in April. And so because it was very cold that year, it was one of the harshest quarters that the company had ever experienced. And as I'd mentioned, the marketing team, 100% turnover. Well, the turnover was somewhere between 30 and 40% on the executive side at the time. And so things quickly unraveled. The owner of the company fired the CEO, and they brought in a new VP of marketing. And so I just kind of saw the writing on the wall. And,
right. He's going to go his path, just like you brought there, right? You knew exactly what to do. You went in and went guns blazing. He's going to do the same thing with what he knows, right? And his experience he brought with him.
And in this instance, the VP was actually a woman. So there was a very different environment. And so...
Wait, did she think because you were a man that you didn't understand the product and the... Is that unfair to ask?
One of the things I think is the funniest thing about having worked in higher education, women's plus size clothing, and five other verticals we'll probably talk about today that I participated in, is that the product doesn't matter to me, and the product doesn't matter in a lot of ways if you're a marketer. You're not selling product. You're selling a feeling. And the feeling at that company was every woman is beautiful. And if you could just adopt that as a mantra, everything else falls into place.
And you felt like you could.
I seriously feel like I could sell any product. And as long as I can understand the feeling and behind that product, what am I trying to deliver, if you will?
And even as a man, I mean, you know, you can relate enough. I mean, I you're probably married and that kind of thing, but you can relate enough to be able to help them get that message out. You feel that strong?
I do. I truly do.
That's pretty cool. It's cool. I mean, I get it. There, if you get that, if that's your world and you can connect, then it sounds like you did. All right, let's do this. Let's take a break. We come back. I want to hear the next, I mean, because it's funny listening to, you know, your path. You know, these products and I can't wait to hear what's next because they're so opposite. I mean, how do we get the lighting from there? From plus size for clothing. All right, we'll be right back. Q4 is coming and you need to get ready now. How would you like some help in getting the keywords you need to drive your private label and wholesale sales even higher? Sounds good, doesn't it? Well, getting those right keywords takes a lot of time that you just don't have. Well, I have the product for you. It's called Scope. Yep, Scope. Comes from the gang at Seller Lab, so you know you can trust it. Scope helps you optimize your listing based on the keywords that are actually helping your competitors sell their products. Yes, you get to see them. You want to get your listing in the best position to sell your products. After all, that's what we're here for, is to sell products. Jeff gave me a great offer for you. The first three keywords are free and $50 off an annual plan. That's the lowest price out there, and you get it because you're listening to my podcast. There's two simple ways to get it. Go to sellerlabs.com/momentum. There's a place to pop in a code. The code is momentum. So again, sellerlabs.com/momentum. Use the code word momentum. Or, even easier, text the phrase get scope. No space, just get scope to 44222 and follow the instructions. It's very, very simple. So text get scope to 44222. You're going to get three free keywords, $50 off. Great offer. Remember to tell Jeff I sent you. You know, it's funny, after talking with him, I thought about this. I saw somebody in one of the posts today, as I'm editing, say that they're leaving merch because their shirts weren't selling or whatever. And yet, she was able to do one part of it, but the second part wasn't working for her. She just didn't get it, she felt like. However, I mean, I want to pause and say what she does know how to do, there's a dollar value on that. And in this episode, Steve and I talk about that, that what you know how to do, many, many companies need that skill set. And you have a specific skill set. So if there's a piece of this business you love, sell that service to somebody else because there's somebody who hates it. And you might like what they do, and maybe you can work out something. Let's get back into the podcast. All right, we're back and we're talking with Stephen Pope. And I'm trying to look ahead and say, okay, here's the connection from plus size women to lighting. I can see it. No, I can't. I can't get there. So take me to the next stage.
Okay. So I jumped ship from that company, and it officially went under like 3 months after I left.
No kidding.
And so
would it have gone under, I mean, had they not had the turnover? I mean, were they on a path? Because I'm assuming the new person came in and changed direction, just like, you know, when JCPenney, you know, brought in this brash young person to change it, and then they turned ship and it failed, and now they're back. So would that, looking back, do you think it would have failed?
I think they needed a strong leader in the CEO chair, and they just didn't have it.
Okay. So,
you know, the guy that turned around Ashley Stewart, they needed that kind of person.
Okay.
And
they're not easy to find.
And they're not, right? And so what's interesting is I actually got a chance to meet, you know, the CEO of Ashley Stewart and hear his story. And he's, you know, he's in women's plus size clothing as well years later. I met him just 2 weeks ago. And if he had been in charge of Oodle Popkin, I guarantee he could have taken that business and quadrupled it, just like he did with Ashley Stewart. So, I mean, it's all a leadership thing, top down for sure. But anyway, so I got out of that. And one of the most important relationships that I've ever had in my life, besides my wife and my kids, ended up being an e-commerce recruiter by the name of Harry Joyner. And I was introduced to him while I was working at Oodle Popkin. And
how many years ago was this?
That would have been less than 5 years ago at this point.
Okay, so less than 5 years ago, e-commerce is definitely starting to take off at this point, right? Companies are saying, you know, the larger companies for sure all have websites. They're all selling junk, right? Has it reached down to the lower level at that point 5 years ago?
So that business was doing more of its sales on its website than it was on marketplaces by a 3-to-1 ratio. So,
really?
So I would say yes, it was definitely becoming mainstream at that point.
Okay. And so there are recruiters now in that world because it's taken off and it's become its own category, right? I mean, it really has e-commerce. So now all of a sudden the recruiters are out there looking for talent.
And so, you know, I was introduced to Harry. And Harry has been probably the most accelerating person of interest in my life because he took a kid who had two failed startups with less than a year and a half of experience in marketing, and he said, "Okay, you get it, and I'm gonna go ahead and place you." And Harry is the kind of guy that usually is working with much higher level digital marketers, and he's got the, you know, connections of all the big wigs. So he invested in me, and he hired me at a company called Nisbets. This time it's British based. So I've worked for the French. I worked for the Germans and now the Brits at this point. We'll get to the French next.
Oh no, we're going global.
Yes. And so this company, Nisbets, is the number one in restaurant equipment in Britain and the United Kingdom. And so at this point, they bought a $5 million warehouse over in the east side of the Baltimore area. And I was their first digital marketing hire dedicated to the American side of the account.
So they were going to launch this successful business, this e-commerce business in the U.S.?
Correct. And so they had been around a year prior to me getting there. They had bought the warehouse. They had, you know, 10 employees, and they were printing out catalogs. Now, the challenge that a lot of British-based companies face is they come to the States and they just expect a couple of things to work the same way, right? Pricing structures are completely different.
Mm.
The size of the country.
Well, yeah, I was going to say Britain is about as big as, what, Rhode Island or New Jersey or something like that, you know, and you think about, yeah, right? I mean, think about it, right? Maybe half of New York.
And the challenge that companies have when they don't have a diversified business model that can adapt to its local geographic location just unravels very quickly, right? So they basically took their British-based catalog and, you know, kind of threw a dollar sign, American dollar sign on it and just kind of sent it out and expected to print money because that company was widely successful in Britain. They've during, you know, all the recessions and downturns, they dominated, they actually grew. And so they did not have that same experience in the America at all. It was very challenging. So yet again, the guy that hired me, at that company within the first 4 weeks left.
Oh no. So, that's never good.
So I've had an experience of going somewhere and then my, you know, boss changes very rapidly.
This is a pattern. You do realize this. It's probably you. There's one common denominator in all this. You.
And yet again, the P&L's turned over to me. And and so are all the major marketing decisions. And so at the time,
well, that's good and bad, right? I mean, it's good and bad, right? It's great because, hey, you finally get to make the decisions. It's bad because now you're going to be held responsible for all those decisions, right?
Now you say finally, but yeah, again, I, at this point, year and a half of marketing experience, right?
It's
and so
true.
You're
a neophyte, yeah.
I make a good talk. I know how to play ball, and I've got the MBA, and I've got the reporter mentality of asking questions. But truly, I'm still a novice when it came to marketing, and so I'm in some big shoes to fill and trying to figure this out. And so what I ended up doing was I determined that their website was so outdated that it would have cost a couple million dollars to fix. And I was like, in this situation where it's a startup, there's just no way they're going to invest this. You know, they're on a European-based software, and that's they're just stuck in their ways. There's no way they're going to listen to me in certain ways. Now, granted, they did install some stuff I asked for on the website. We got our website speed down from 5.5 seconds down to 2 seconds. We cached a bunch of things using a CDN, and that worked out quite well. But the website growth was just really bad. So what I ended up doing is I launched them on a bunch of marketplaces. So I launched them on Amazon, eBay, Pricefalls, Rakuten, Sears. And I launched them on all these marketplaces. And some of those were fresh and new at the time. And just started selling product like crazy. eBay was actually one of our surprising strong points. We sold a lot of refrigerators and a lot of appliances on both eBay and Sears.
Wait, a refrigerator?
Yes.
The big giant thing in my kitchen downstairs. You were selling them on eBay.
Restaurant quality grade, somewhere between $1,000 and $4,000 refrigerators.
Okay, so that's a pretty thin market. And so I guess you just can't go down to Sears and buy a restaurant grade refrigerator. So that kind of makes sense to me that you would naturally go look online, right? Other than the catalogs that you would get in the mail.
And the restaurant business in America is very competitive. And there's a lot of companies that do it. And there's a lot of, I would say there's even a lot of showrooms or retail spaces that are dedicated for that. So very, very competitive. Country's too big, shipping costs too high. Mm-hmm. They didn't acquire a company. They started one from scratch. And that was the fundamental number one mistake that company made. Whenever you're going to launch a business in a new country or a new market, in my opinion, you should acquire somebody. If you try and start from scratch and just apply all the things that you've done already, chances are your logistics are going to be too weak, your marketing will not have the customer base, or something else will fall through the cracks. So
then what is your advice then? I mean, I don't want to lose this because I think that's a valid point. Somebody's bringing a new brand to market, and it's a little difficult because we're all Amazon sellers now, right, on who's listening to this mostly, and they're going to say, well, I can just bring a brand and create it on Amazon, because that's true. However,
you can. However, so let's assume for a moment that you've got a giant business and you're already doing well in American Amazon, but you wanted to go launch in British base.
Okay.
You can't apply that same strategy one for one over to that other market.
So, you go into big thinking here for a second. Hold on, because you're getting me thinking differently than I've ever thought. So you're suggesting that Steve's glassware, I'm looking at my glass on my desk, right? I have real success here. I've got a great brand. Everything's working great, selling it on Amazon. If I'm considering going to the EU, A, I need to research the market, but B, consider perhaps partnering or acquiring a similar product or brand?
I absolutely would. I would acquire a business.
Really?
I would not just launch the product straight as is. Because
no kidding.
The cost of that acquisition will pay dividends, especially in the first 90 days where you're trying to figure everything out. I want to hold some thoughts on this front about...
You're blowing my mind because I'm not... No, I'll be honest with you because, I mean, look, how many emails do you get from Amazon saying, come to the EU? Come on, come sit on this webinar. Come, we got it. We'll just move everything over for you. It's a piece of cake. We just convert the language. It'll go right to Germany. Piece of cake. Maybe not.
And so as we get closer to present day things that I'm doing, I'll have some thoughts to share later.
All right. About that's important. I don't want to lose this.
The right people and yeah. acquiring the right talent and businesses to get where you want to go. Hmm. So I'll pause that thought here. So I'm working at Nisbets, and that company decided to close shop, and so they laid off all 13 employees, and so. Mr. Harry Joyner came to my rescue. He had hired me there, and he felt bad. It was a 8-month stint, if that, and so he helped me find another gig.
Because this wasn't no fault of your own, them failing. I mean, correct. You know, it was a bad decision.
I grew marketplaces by about $500,000, and that was about a 20% growth for the company.
Okay.
So I did a lot for nothing.
Okay.
Right. In a short time period, I launched a marketplace every 2 or 3 weeks, congruently, just left and right, just launch. And I actually prefer that strategy versus launch and wait and see. I think launching as many things at the same time and then paying attention and focusing your time where the ones that do succeed is the right strategy. Some call it a shotgun approach. I call it more of a diversify low amounts of effort in many places and then double down where it works.
Well, because wouldn't it be tied to now when you're putting something out, you know, for example, you're doing lighting, you would be putting a message out for one particular lighting. People search in their own marketplaces, right? So if you're in all those other marketplaces, you're going to touch the guy who's an eBay shopper, because an eBay shopper is generally different than an Amazon shopper, which is different than a Newegg shopper, the nerds of the world. Or, you know,
you're
is
correct.
That, am I right on that?
You're absolutely correct. Now, take that Newegg example, right? So the guy that's going to buy a light off of Newegg,
they're nerds.
They're going to be the guy that's going on Newegg to buy all their computer parts for the department, and they're working in the software development side or their hardware side of the company, and they're like, oh, and I guess I could replace this light above me. It's kind of going out. So, you know, they're buying is an add-on item, right? They're not going to Newegg to buy lighting. They just pick it up because they see it there.
Because that's the world they live in. And I use the term nerd affectionately because I admire them. And it's true, they live in that world. And so you want to get that message. So when they look in their world, you're there. It's kind of back to our Jeff Cohen discussion, right? He want to be everywhere, because if not, the competitor's going to be there. That's really what you're saying.
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, is not taken advantage of by as many people as could be. I think it's still a market opportunity.
Because it's not that expensive. I mean, and I don't want to harp on this, but realistically, in today's world, it's really easy for you to get up, put your content on Newegg. I mean, there's software that'll do it automatically for you. It's literally opening an account, putting a feed in there, and then boom, it goes in, right? I mean, most all of these platforms are very simple to get your product up on. And today.
I would agree with that. And the challenge that I think most companies have is, okay, when do I make the jump from Excel sheets to feed software?
Right.
And
because it's expensive, Stephen. It's expensive.
I don't believe there's a right answer to that question. But I would say that anybody who wants to scale has to be on feed software from day one. And the quicker,
regardless of the cost,
it is always worth the cost. Especially the moment you have more than, let's say, 50 products and more than 3 marketplaces. That's where I would draw the line in the sand.
Oh, okay. So I like that. So 50 products, 50 SKUs, right? Or yes. Or no, you're saying products? Does that include variations?
No, you can have variations on top of that, but I would say 50 unique products, and 3 marketplaces, because not only are you worrying about inventory management software, but you're also worried about, when you try and make an update in one place and then having to replicate that 3 mm-hmm. times,
yep.
and then trying to focus on product sourcing simultaneously and rebuying, it becomes a mess quickly.
That's good advice.
So I think having a single source of data from an early stage in the company will serve you very much. Having a SKU naming convention. I could spend
consistently
an hour talking about that.
No, but that consistency. Where did you learn that? I mean, because you know, here you are. You've got a communications degree, dude. I mean, where did you learn this? No, I'm serious though, because I think this is fair.
Teaching. Here's the thing that I think a lot of millennials struggle with. As a millennial, I think that we're given a lot of grief and criticized wrong in many ways. But here's the one way I say that the criticism should stick. And that is, there's an expectancy from the millennials that someone's going to tell them what to do to succeed in life. And that is completely false. everything I have learned, I taught and worked hard for myself. And I had to go out and seek that knowledge. And not just seek it, but also endeavor to seek it. And bang down doors to find that information.
So not just read it, absorb it.
Read it, webinars, marketplaces, talking to people. I think the number one most important thing was adopting technology and asking questions, right? So we're back to your journalism thing again.
I mean, we're back to it.
Yep. Seriously, like everything has been about research and ask questions. And then at the same time, realize that marketing is not about products. It's about people and feelings. And once you understand that marketing is more about relationships than anything else, everything else falls into place. And so the thing that here's my biggest weakness. My biggest weakness is product sourcing. And so right now in the last, we're skipping a couple of years here, and I want to go backwards here in a minute, but I have been struggling to figure out how to source. And so that's what I focused on the last year of my life entirely. So we'll talk a little bit about that today too. I imagine.
Because I don't want to lose that again, because I think you're saying, hey, wasn't the strongest, so I have to go put my 1,000 hours in, right? Because that's always what they say. You got to put 1,000 hours in to master something. So you're saying that's what I needed to do, and I put in my 1,000 hours. That's what you took a year and focused on. But doesn't the rest of the business collapse because of that?
No. typically speaking, you have to find a way to balance and juggle multiple fronts, right? So,
but you can't watch Game of Thrones, you know, right? And no, I'm serious. You can't binge watch. I mean, this is the Gary Vee advice. You can't sit there and binge watch House of Cards and then expect to have the knowledge without doing the time. You could get there and catch up a year later. I think that's where you're saying.
I would say if you're binge watching Game of Thrones while simultaneously being in your Seller Central account and clicking on buttons, you might be able to figure it out.
You might.
but no, there's definitely a lot of research you have to do. And so part of that research at the time, I was like, well, great. I've tried a venture capitalist firm. I've worked for a privately owned German company. That one failed. I worked for a British based company. That one failed. So I was like, okay. I'm going to try an agency next.
Who's left? What about that? What about the French? I mean, they don't know anything.
So here's the French. So this agency was called Moxie. They're based out of Atlanta, and I ended up getting a sweet gig working remote as an e-commerce consultant. That was the title of it.
Through your broker, the recruiter.
Yes, Harry Joyner again. So this is the second time he's placed me, and I took an agency job where I was redesigning Verizon Wireless's website and mobile app for conversion. And what's really interesting about Verizon Wireless, and I can't speak too much about it just due to confidentiality, but they're a very siloed organization, very similar to Amazon. And so I had to find a way to help them, you know, rebuild a lot of the things and help them figure out how to cut through some of the corporate bureaucrat nature of large organizations to connect the right people. I was actually connecting people within Verizon sometimes to each other to, you know, make that headway. And that was a very interesting time because, you know, I was working remote and I was flying out to, you know, some of their buildings in multiple places in the country and kind of having those conversations and saying, here's what you need to do and here's why. And they came a long way in a short time period.
Wait, so walk us through that real quick. Are you A-B testing certain pieces to see which one goes a little better? And then, I mean, like I've heard these crazy stories that a red button, you know, sometimes works better than a yellow button or something like that. I mean, is it that specific?
No, I would say big companies in the top 100 Fortune 100, they know how to do that.
Okay, so that's not an issue.
That's not it.
So where did you offer value then?
In common sense principles, back to the very basic marketing techniques that you would learn as a first year marketer. And so, which is to say, your landing pages need to be simple and understandable, and you need to have a flow. And so Verizon Wireless had one of the most complicated products imaginable. They sell phones, they sell accessories, but they also sell subscriptions. And I think I can't think of very many products where it's both a product and a subscription, and you have to do both right. And so there's a lot of competing forces there. And so really it was all about trying to make sure that the consumer could figure out the product and figure out how to get from step A to B. So most checkout funnels in today's e-commerce world should be a single page checkout or a four-step checkout or something very basic, right? Well, online with Verizon and other big companies, it's a very, very inundated. We're talking 13 steps, or at least it used to be. It's a lot better now. And so you had to find a way to kind of cut through some of that.
Is it because they've evolved so many different times, right? Their business keeps evolving and evolving and adding on, and technology is advancing so quickly. And so they just added to it. Oh, just add that to the page. Just add that and add that. And then eventually it gets to be unmanageable.
That's exactly right. And though these decisions are made in a vacuum based on politics, typically. Well, we can't offend that part of the company, so we'll just leave that in. Super basic decision making was a struggle. And by the way, most of the things I'm saying are not unique to this one.
Well,
any company that gets to a certain size, these are techniques that would be highly applicable.
But isn't it applicable to most listeners, Amazon businesses right now? 80% of their profits come from 20%, you know, that the 80-20 rule, right? So isn't that something that we as sellers should be pulling back this advice and saying, you know what, you might have made your business very complicated. Go back and look at what's really working. Take the emotion out of it, which is very difficult, right? And apply it to your business. I mean, that's what I'm hearing you say, that worked for Verizon. And if it can work for them, can it work for me?
And so I definitely struggled to figure out how to incorporate change in mass, right? As a young consultant coming in and saying common sense things, you know, I made a huge impact for what I could do. You know, if anybody who's got my Verizon on their mobile app from iPhone, you know, I had a play in that, right? And it's easier to use, and the star ratings are greatly improved, like 30% better than they were. I mean, they were like 2.5. They were their tech company with a 2.5 star average on their mobile app. It was a problem.
That's right? A bad thing. That's not good.
So I definitely made a play in that. But I did quickly learn that working for the agency life was not a long-term fit for me. And I wanted to get back to selling products. And so this, yet again, Harry Joyner came to my rescue, and he hooked me up with a company that sold gold and silver out of Oklahoma called Atmex. And
I mean, did you move from Baltimore to Atlanta?
I did.
To the gold, oh my God.
Yeah. Now, selling gold and silver was the easiest product I've ever sold in my entire life.
Now, were you selling gold coins and gold bars or gold jewelry?
Yeah. Atmex is the largest online retailer for gold and silver. All things. We're talking bullion. We're talking collectibles. We're talking silver stackers, you name it.
No kidding.
And you know, with the stock market at an all-time high right now, good time to invest in gold and silver, because people who are going to see that stock market fall inevitably at some point should be diversifying their portfolio. I'd say about 20% of your portfolio should be in physical metals, not the stock for those metals. I'm talking physical ownership, gold and silver. I became a believer very quickly working for that company.
Okay. Wow. All right, so you go out there, and they were already established. This wasn't a startup.
Oh yeah, this was probably the most established company I'd worked for, and I was coming in to basically just pull the right levers. So since I've had a lot of SEO experience, that was my primary duty at that company. I owned all of the acquisition spend, and so I went after mostly SEO traffic.
Google and SEO traffic generally, yes. Right? I mean, so, when we think Amazon is 80% of e-commerce, Google at one point was the majority of search, correct?
Correct. And I would say that people are very much underrating the Microsoft of the world, if you will. Mm-hmm. And they need to pay attention a little bit better to Bing. But definitely Google is still still a heavy driver there.
Back then.
So anyway, I in a very short time period figured out, okay, they're under investing in these keywords. I need to invest better here. Use the same software I used, previously with Conductor. So I've had a chance to use that software in three companies, and really just started hitting home and building content. Now, for anybody who wants to spend time investing in SEO, and this is not just for websites, it's also applicable to Amazon. You got to do two things right. You got to understand the tech, and you got to understand content development. And so the tech side is putting the right keyword in the right place at the right time. On the Amazon side, on the website side, it's much more complicated. You got site speed issues. You got all these tags that have to be correct. You got to basically adopt Google as your personal customer.
And it's very specific, right? I mean, it's not like you arbitrary. It's very, this comma must be here or whatever, right? This space there, right?
Yes. And so I created a plan that executed both on the technology front and on the content generation. Mm-hmm. And I actually told the company, I want to build 2,000 pages of content from scratch.
Jesus.
And yeah, right? And people looked at me like I was crazy.
I mean, that does sound crazy. I mean, dude, I'm just going to tell you, that sounds crazy. I mean, 2,000 pages.
2,000. Wow. Yeah, and I think I was on track for that 2,000, by the way. I had built out about 750 of those pages by the time I ended up leaving there. It worked. It worked very well.
And a page would be what? I mean, hey, here's the history of gold, or I mean, give me
yes,
an example.
What exactly a, that.
Okay. So, and then so, that so would it's, be, it's, you become the authority. That's really what the concept is, right? You're the authority.
I was trying to build the Wikipedia of precious metals on Amex's website.
So then no matter what, when they want anything to do with it, anything related to that, it always leads to you, and then you have them as a place where you can make the pitch. Fair?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
And so,
which is today's lesson.
one of the coolest tools that I use is called SimilarWeb. You can even use it for free just to look up some facts and details. So what I'm about to say is publicly available. I doubled their SEO traffic by 1 million unique visitors. And so you could use a tool like that to look them up and see their trades. So they're currently ranked, number 5,000 in terms of traffic in the country. And in any case, they did really well on the SEO front, but I got headhunted and decided that I didn't like living in Oklahoma. Loved working for that company, learned a ton, but I ended up in Atlanta, and this is where I work today for the lighting company. Along the way, I was able to meet a business partner who had some technology understanding. And so I partnered up with him and we launched a company called Fine Occasion. So I made my wife move so many times in the course of a couple of years. She moved while she was pregnant with our firstborn. And I made her move again while she was pregnant with her secondborn in less than 3 years. So we moved from Maryland to Oklahoma. And then we moved from, are you still there?
Mm-hmm.
And then we moved from Oklahoma to Georgia. And now I work as running the marketplaces for Lights Online, and I also run Fine Occasion.
And now, and Harry didn't get you this job?
He did, actually. So I actually,
this is
an embarrassing record, but I currently hold a four-time tied for most times being filled for a job by Harry Joyner.
No kidding. I mean, there's got to be a statue at some point or a monument somewhere put up. So what was the thinking? Because I love your title. Tell us again what your title is.
So Director of Marketplaces.
Just think about that. Director of Marketplaces. How long ago did that not exist?
Maybe 2, 3, 4 years ago, somewhere in that time range.
Right. And this is a brick and mortar business, right? They have, was it 5 locations?
So Progressive Lighting, which owns Lights Online, has 10 retail stores.
10 retail stores.
In Texas, Georgia, and the Carolinas. And so they're a 50-year-old sleepy company, and they decided to spin up an e-commerce wing. They gave us our own building. A lot of the groundwork was done before I got here.
But who's the progressive person, progressive, right? Who is that person that knew that? Was it the son or the daughter of the owners? Or was it the owner himself that was that visionary?
So it's a third generation company at this point,
mm-hmm.
But it was the son of the current owner, and it's his pet project and his vision. And I got to give credit to them because they struggled for years to get this off the ground, and they didn't get it going initially, and then they just got it going in the last year. And it's a very strong growth rate. We're growing so rapidly, it's insane, and the growing pains are quite challenging. And again, still 90% of our business is on Amazon. And so what I have focused more on this year than anything else is product sourcing. So I go to the Dallas market, I talk to all the lighting companies, and I also talk to some of the home and good companies simultaneously, because everything that I learn and adopt for you know, my full-time job is also applicable to my personal company, and vice versa. And so, you know, Fine Occasion is a much smaller thing, and it's just three people at this point. But we focus on glassware, we focus on chef knives, wine glasses, beer glasses, personalization, and I also sell some olive oil and vinegar, right? Products that have nothing to do with each other in many instances. And it's because at the end of the day, it was all about finding products that through relationships that connect with people. So one of the biggest turning points for us was going to the Canton Fair in April. And I've been to the Dallas market twice and the Atlanta market just a couple weeks ago. And so the mistake that I think that we made when we went to the Canton Fair was, and this is the thing I would recommend to people instead, is instead of going to the Canton Fair for private label, I recommend that you go hire a broker and you go to the manufacturing plants. So hire a broker who's worked with manufacturers in your division before and go out and actually physically visit the plants. And that's what I'm going to do next, probably in the next year. Because when we went to the Canton Fair, we were overwhelmed with contacts. We were overwhelmed with people who could do exactly what we wanted, but we didn't know how to qualify any of them.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, they'll tell you they can do everything, right? And you don't know whether they're truly manufacturers or they're distributors of distributors of distributors of distributors, right?
And that's been the challenge. When it takes 2 months to get sample product out, that's insane, right? I listened to one of your more recent podcasts where he was getting samples within a week. That's insane. I wish I could do that. And obviously, there are places like Alibaba Express where they do focus more on timing and stuff like that. But I was looking for scalable, unique product that I could own, get some exclusives off potentially, or at least replicate some other successful products anyway. So we found lots of companies that could do what we're asking, but we have yet to find one that we trust long-term with a scalable relationship. So we're launching pallets and pallets of product coming to the stateside right now from multiple vendors, and we don't know which ones are high quality or not. Hired inspectors for some, and I actually, just in the last couple of weeks, found somebody who does fill that broker and logistics role, because it's a complete foreign concept to me. And I think most private labelers are getting stuck at this stage, getting stuck from China to the stateside.
Yeah.
The most frustrating thing for me is definitely product sourcing, without a doubt.
Now, you have partners in this business?
Say again?
You have partners in this business?
I do. And so my partner has a technology background and a local sourcing background buying from wholesalers, but neither of us had done China. So he and I went out to China in April, and we spent a week at the Canton Fair, and we walked everywhere. And I came home with 300 business cards. And I researched them as much as I could, trying to figure out what we need to do and how we're going to do it. And then we just started executing, asking questions. And I could not believe how slow that process is. It drives me crazy. And then you have to micro all of these conversations, and you know, they want to start conversations at 9 o'clock at our time, and you know, 10 o'clock our time, because they're 12 hours ahead. Complete difference. But one of the crazy things while I was in China, though, and here's where I kind of, you know, kind of mind blowing to me, is I go to a circus act while I was in China, and I'm sitting down and I'm watching dancing bears, right? Coolest thing ever at a circus, dancing bears. There's just something to say about dancing bears. But anyway, so right before the circus starts, I've got my phone out, and I'm realizing, hey, I'm out of product on my, you know, three of these top sellers. So I quickly create an Amazon shipment label, save it to my phone, and I go create a PO, and I ship it off to this other person. I'm like, hey, can you go fulfill these orders? And boom, we're off to the races. And I do this while sitting down at a circus. And I was like, man, look at e-commerce. Like, there's no way you could have done this several years ago, right?
You're in China.
Yeah.
Watching dancing bears.
Exactly.
And here, boom, what happens?
and so I realized I've got to do an order. I got to place these orders. And so just the digital marketing nature of some of that, very telling. I, at the time it was just like normal. Hey, I got to put an order in. Cause I've been tied to my phone for the past year, especially doing all these logistics things and, you know, wherever I am, I gotta be there to have those conversations.
When you sit back and think about where your life has come from, where it is today, and it's clearly not a straight line. It's damn it. It's across the country, back, forth, back, forth, back, forth. Is there any way you could have gotten there with the, I guess the MBA, but with the digital marketing degree, do you think it's possible to get where you are today just getting out of school? I mean,
oh, absolutely. It's a knowledge gap and a process gap / investment problem though, right? So, you know, you always hear you got to have money to make money. I would say that's absolutely true. Like the amount of money that you need to invest in private labeling, I think is understated. I think people overemphasize, oh, you need just a couple $1,000 and you can make it happen. I think that's a gross overestimation. I think you need thousands of dollars to make it work. So somebody out of school doesn't have that capital, but what they might have is a drive and a hunger. And so in the last year, when I was trying to figure out this product sourcing thing, we bought from American wholesalers and we personalized products. I started retail.
So that became customized for you. That became your, yes, your basic private label product.
Correct. So if you go on Amazon right now and type in Fine Occasion, number one hit will be our best seller for personalized wine and beer and shot glasses. And it's a pewter crest that we put onto the glassware. And I would say this is my starter product. It's not my long-term product. And so I'm looking for more long-term scalable products. And so trying to figure out product sourcing and trying to itch that scratch, I started doing retail arbitrage and I started doing online arbitrage and I did reverse wholesale. I went to the American-based market shows. We did American wholesalers and we tried to do kits. We tried to improve product, went to the Canton Fair. And at this stage, that's why, you know, I've tried all these different things and I've realized there's not a secret sauce to any one of those items. But I did realize that if I really want to make this work, I need to hire a broker and a logistics player to you know, who speaks Chinese and can help me scale this and can micro all those conversations, because I want to launch 100 products in the next 365 days. And I'm talking 100 unique products. And that's not going to be an easy feat.
No way.
And so we've had a lot of success from our initial investments, and we've been able to, you know, me and my partner, we put in, you know, $5,000 each. We've not put in any additional funds. And we snowballed that money, and we've been able to continually snowball that money. If we had made an early mistake, that money would have dried up and we'd have to reinvest. And so I think that the challenge a lot of people are going to run into is if you're just starting for the first time and you don't have any prior experience, you're probably going to fail, probably 70% chance you're going to fail your first couple of products. That's normal, and I would say that should be your learning process. But instead of private labeling your first product, I wouldn't start there. I would do reverse wholesale to start or arbitrage to start, just to go through the motion. So if you've never opened up an Amazon account before and you're wondering, hey, how do I start today? Open up that Amazon account. That takes 5 minutes. And then go to the clearance center at whatever store you frequently visit and understand the products. Could be Toys R Us, could be anywhere. And just take your Amazon app, which you need to install, scan the barcodes, and find, you know, couple hundred dollars in merchandise that you can just retail art. And once you figure out that process, then go and do some private labeling, or then go and buy, you know, from some wholesalers. And I think that's the best starting point.
Because those things are very complicated, right? They're not easy. I mean, there's a lot of odd things to go along with it, right? And so figuring that out is your advice, is saying, let's get that figured out so that isn't an issue, right? Get all that figured out. So then when you're ready to launch your product, you know what? Here we're back to your whole career. You would take on a new company knowing what you know and go in and put in the best practices and the best techniques and the processes that you learned at the previous company, and you had an immediate effect, right? It got faster and faster. So basically, that's the same advice you're giving here, is go learn all that, put all that behind-the-scenes stuff in, figure all that out, so when you're ready to launch that product, you can do it faster and put the best techniques. Fair?
That's a great summary. because if you spend your time learning but losing money simultaneously, it's going to be discouraging. And so I would say try and take $500 in retail arbitrage and go break even on it. And just that's money that you're spending to learn the process. And so if you know a lot about shoes, go to a shoe company and buy some of their clearance shoes and resell those. If you know a lot about chef knives, go do chef knives. It doesn't really matter what the product is. Could be toys, could be anything. Toys are probably the easiest retail arbitrage, by the way, especially going into this Christmas market. Right now is a really good time to go buy product anytime between now and October, and then immediately start selling it. You're going to sell out everything by December 20th, most likely in the toy world. And then people will have no product and sales will suck from December 20th to about January 20th. And then things start dipping up. So all the rankings on Amazon will be very, very misleading between right after Christmas. So that's definitely a kind of a word of caution to people when they're trying to make their investments for next year. Rankings on Amazon the first month of January, it's super misleading.
So what are you going to do? You know, I'm sitting here looking now, I'm summarizing, right? So your career's going well. You've got your toe in the water for something. It sounds like you have a passion to do with progressive lighting, just because it sounds like it was your world and you've hit your stride. And I mean, again, I look at the site, I look at the quality of everything. I can see that they're hitting it right. All that stuff is done right. Now you're doing your own thing on the side, your side hustle, as I always like to call them, and that seems to be working pretty well.
Recreational work, if you will.
Yeah. Recreational work.
My wife and I joke about having three jobs. I've got the full-time job, I've got the nights and weekend job trying to grow a company, and then third one, consulting. And I don't ever look for consulting, but people, they hear about what I've done for one of their friends, and then they hire me, and it's like, oh my gosh, I don't know how I fit this all in, but it's a juggling act. And it pays off, and I enjoy it.
And they're all related, I mean, in one way or another, because they do best practice in one probably is transferable. Well, I'm certain it's transferable. What else? What's next? What's missing from this story?
So the reason why I mentioned that I'm at the hockey stick just starting to go up the curve on the momentum side is because a year from now, if I launch all 100 products, I'm going to be widely successful and have a mini empire under my belt, and I'll start hiring people and be able to go out on my own. But I think honestly, it might take me up to 2 years to pull it off. And so my goal is the 1 year mark, but it might take me 2 years to figure it out. And, you know, I'm microing the investment funds to try and bring them as far as I can in a short time period while being patient with the slowness of sourcing product. Product sourcing is a really slow and meticulous process. And it's very, very frustrating. Every job I've had before this has been, here's a product, go sell it, and I don't have to worry about sourcing.
Right,
so
right.
This is where I have to cut my teeth and figure it out.
Okay, so this is it. You're going to invest your time. But that's the lesson, right? Because if you figure that out, we're back to that whole, your advice again about bringing the products to market. Wait until you have the whole background, the processes all figured out, worked out, then you can flow and you can go very quickly. That's kind of what you're describing here, is you're going to go put in that 1,000 hours, get it mastered, and then you can just scale. I believe it too. Okay, so the goal of the podcast is to help people move forward. I don't want to miss it because I think you got some really good sound advice. Give us. I'm going to make it do it in one. I know you probably have seven, but I want one. One thing that you say that people who are struggling in their business right now, they're stuck at $30,000 a month, they want to get to that next level, tell them what they can do.
They need more product. At the end of the day, it is literally about finding the right product. And if you're stuck at $30,000 right now, it's because you don't have enough SKUs. And that 80-20 rule may apply to your current SKU set, but it does not apply to your future SKU set. You should be launching products like crazy 24/7.
Love it. Oh. All right. People want more information. Best way to get in touch with you, Stephen.
So you can get in touch with me. I'm on LinkedIn. Just type in Stephen Pope, or you can email me at StephenWaynePope@gmail.com. That's Stephen with the V. Wayne is in John Wayne. Pope, P-O-P-E as in Catholic Pope, @gmail.com. I also write on ecommerceconsulting.com. You can find several of my articles there. One of the articles I wrote on there is how to launch accounts. So if you're in the very starting phases, there's an article for that. There's also an article about steps to get your Amazon account reinstated from a suspension. I do a bunch of content writing because that's my, you know, that's my reporter background, and, and that's generally speaking how a lot of my connections come about. So
awesome. Dude, you blew my mind. You blew my mind with the European thing for sure. But I love...
Yeah, the acquire, it's better to acquire than start from scratch. When you've already got something figured out in your own market, go acquire somebody else in another market because you'll be surprised what you don't know.
Yeah, no, I agree. And their best practices you can immediately implement in your business and take that to the next. Oh, I love it. All right, you get me excited. Man, I wish you nothing but success. Thank you so much.
Steve, it's been great being on your show as well. I think your listeners, the reason you have a growing base of listeners is because you're telling people stories and how to move to the next step. And I think that's exactly what we need more. We need more people like you out there doing that. And so I would applaud you on that.
I'm very kind. Thank you so much. Take care. Smart guy, gives some good information. Reach out to him if you need some help, because he does some consulting. But again, I think it's very cool that somebody is taking what they know from the outside world, staying current based on, quite frankly, somebody else's time, and yet they're able to apply it to their own thing. I love that. I think having a side hustle is the smartest thing you can do. And man, this guy's a great living proof of it. ecommercemomentum.com, ecommercemomentum.com. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the e-commerce Momentum Podcast. All the links mentioned today can be found at ecommercemomentum.com under this episode number. Please remember to subscribe and like us on iTunes.